Kate Powers, your initiative for 2016 is called the 400 Dreams Initiative. Please tell me this doesn't mean we're going to have to sit through 400 productions of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
That was initially the idea.
Oh, dear.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 498, Year of Shakespeare. Last February, I spoke with one of my favorite people I've never actually met, the director and teacher Kate Powers, who was one of the organizers of the 400 Dreams Initiative for the Shakespeare Theater Association. We spoke in February, but then I flew immediately off to Qatar, then opened my adaptation of Jasper Ford's The Air Affair at Valparaiso University, then immediately headed off to the Folger to open William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged, so I completely forgot about our conversation. I clearly need a new brain with larger RAM. So my apologies to Kate and to you, because this is a great chat, not only about all the festivities occurring in this year of Shakespeare 2016, but in addition, Kate talks about the production of Twelfth Night she was in the middle of directing at Sing Sing Prison, which sounds kind of amazing.
I'll be honest with you, four years ago, when we first started having conversations about it, the original idea was, let's have productions, not 400 per se, but let's have productions of A Midsummer Night's Dream all around the world to celebrate 400 years of Shakespeare's legacy. That was the original idea. And I wanted no part of that, to be honest.
Okay.
But, you know, as these things go, pretty much the entire population of the committee to make this happen at STA shifted over time. And I said, I don't want to limit it. I want to make it as inclusive as possible. I want everyone to be able to play. I don't want to prescribe. You know, there was an idea for a while that it would be like New Year's Eve, where you see the fireworks in Hong Kong, and then you see the fireworks in Sydney, and then you know, sort of rolling around the globe, right, as the different time zones reached it. And so for a while, there was an impulse to say, can we have people doing events on Saturday, the 23rd of April, between like 6 p.m. and 10 p.m. in their time zone, so that we have this kind of cascade. And I fought that, because I thought, I want people to be able to celebrate however and whenever it pleaseth them, right? So the goal was to, for me, when I became the chair of the committee, was to say, whatever celebrating Shakespeare means to you, whether that's a sonnet slam, whether that is a scene sharing, whether that is a full production, whether that is reading a bad quarto, which is really just a misunderstood quarto, whether that is cake and ale, you know, whatever that is. I thought, let's get as many people, you know, obviously professional theaters and university programs, but let's have community groups. Let's have senior citizen centers. Let's have, you know, Girl Scout troops that want to get their, I don't know, Bard badge. If they're saying, like, whoever wants to play,
yeah,
whoever likes Shakespeare, let's make this as inclusive as possible. So
let's get our Bard on. I like it.
Let's get our Bard on. Yeah. So we do have, at this point now, we have participation on all seven continents of the globe. So the scientists at Palmer Station in Antarctica are going to make a video, kind of like Reduced Shakespeare did, which will be part of this initiative. We have gotten the green light from NASA, so we are going to have a downlink at some point with the International Space Station. Nobody has ever spoken Shakespeare from space before.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Right? So now we're like, oh, please, don't accidentally quote any Shakespeare in the next 2 months.
I was going to say, I'm sure Neil Armstrong said, zounds! At some point.
Right? Slight after him and beat him again.
Oh, I love that. So tell me, what is the organizing organization behind all this? What is
sure.
STA?
So STA is the Shakespeare Theater Association. It used to be the Shakespeare Theater Association of America. We dropped the of America a few years back, again, towards the goal of including everybody who wants to participate, right? So principally, STA is a member organization for theaters, institutional theater companies, for whom Shakespeare is a significant part of their mission. So, you know, our members include places like Stratford, Canada, Oregon Shakespeare, Utah Shakespeare, Chesapeake Shakespeare, Shakespeare Notre Dame, The Globe, But it also includes places like Prague Shakespeare and Shakespeare South Africa and Shakespeare New South Wales in Australia. We have partners in Argentina and in Brazil. Technically, I am what's called an associate member of STA because I'm just me. I'm not a representative of an institutional theater. I'm just a freelance director with a serious case of geekolatry.
you've got a bard on, in other words.
I guess I do. Yeah.
Yes. Congratulations.
A raging bard on.
What about but the work you do with rehabilitation through the arts in prisons, that incorporates Shakespeare as well, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it sure does. About 2 years ago, I had said to the guys with whom I work at Sing Sing Correctional Facility that this event was coming, this global celebration of Shakespeare's legacy. And I said, there are going to be prisons in Northern Ireland and in South Africa and in Australia and in several parts of the United States that are going to be doing Shakespeare in 2016. And I said, all these other people as well are going to be doing it. And I said, would you guys like to participate in that? And they, with a certain amount of anxiety or Shakespeare, said, yes, they would like to be part of that. And so last summer we narrowed it down to Othello or Twelfth Night.
Those are two very distinct choices.
Yeah, well, I was lobbying pretty hard for a comedy because there's a lot of Shakespeare within the facility. And as I'm sure you can appreciate, funny is a gateway drug, right?
Yes, it is.
And so I thought, funny would be better. If people are coming with anxiety, let's do something really funny. And I think Twelfth Night is a practically perfect comedy. So, a guy gets wrongfully incarcerated in the middle of Act 4 of Twelfth Night, and we have to decide whether we still like the people we thought we liked before because they've treated him so badly, or not. Our protagonist gets washed up on the shore of a new and dangerous place and has to decide how much of herself it's safe to reveal and what she needs to conceal in order to survive, which is an experience that every man inside that prison has had. So I thought to look at those couple of things in such a funny way that Twelfth Night gives us, and to have the funniest sword fight in the history of sword fights in there too.
Yes. Yes. What do you use for swords in Sing Sing?
Well, I had this because, of course, that's an issue, right? They did the Scottish play about 10 years ago before I got involved, and they had cardboard swords. And I thought, well, I think I want to send up the silliness of this in every way. And also I wanted to create a visual universe that really invites the men in the facility into the play really fast, right? That kind of subverts their idea of what they might perceive Shakespeare to be, right? So let's just embrace, I hadn't thought of it until this very moment, but I think that Reduced Shakespeare Company would really appreciate some of the choices that we've made. So my first thought was I wanted to do balloon animal swords and then have like a balloon animal crown for Orsino and just like, but I have learned that balloon animals are problematic in prison because, they said, well, only if you can account for every single balloon.
Oh.
Because you can use them as condoms, Austin, and you can also use them for drugs.
Yeah, right.
And I said, well, I can't guarantee that a balloon won't break into many different pieces of latex, and I don't know how I would even know how many there were, much less how I would make sure that I had collected them all.
Right.
And they said, well, then you can't do that. So we're going to use plastic inflatable swords. And we have a plastic inflatable crown, and we have a plastic inflatable palm tree that Sir Toby Belch and Feste and Sir Andrew will hide behind in the garden.
Cool.
We have a little plastic inflatable campfire that Viola and the sea captain will warm themselves at when they get tossed up in Act 1, Scene 2.
I love it. Well, and as you know, my preference in my comedies is always to have are always the comedies that have a little meat on the bone, as 'twere. And doing Twelfth Night in a prison, just that context alone, the context of performing in the prison enriches it.
Yeah,
that's really cool. And there's issues of I guess are there issues of gender fluidity, or are we talking about concealing and revealing?
I think it's more concealing and revealing. I think there are definitely issues about gender fluidity and homophobia or homo anxiety in there is big. And I have tried to broach those subjects, and we are not quite ready to talk about them.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think that idea of, you know, the mask that you put on to get through your day in prison, and when is it safe and with whom is it safe to either let the mask slip a little bit or actually take it off and reveal who you are.
Yeah.
That's pretty palpable. That's visceral. That's every day for the guys I'm working with.
This is Christopher Moore, the author of Fool and the Serpent of Venice, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Next week on July 7th and 8th, we'll perform William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina. Then we'll perform for the entire month of August William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Pleasance Beyond at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And we have a bunch of performance dates this fall of 2016 all over the U.S. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with director Kate Powers.
What are some of the cooler celebrations for the 400 Dream Initiative? I know that on Shakespeare's birthday, I'm going to be watching that documentary Shakespeare in Love on a loop.
Well, sure. Well, let's see. I think my favorite thing that's come in so far, because we have this at weareshakespeare.nd.edu, you can see a map. And if you're having an event from Sonnet Slam to Scene Sharing to full production, you can fill out a form there, and we will add your event to the map. So you can go and look. And in New Orleans, they're having a jazz funeral for Shakespeare on Saturday, April 23rd.
Oh, cool. That's pretty cool.
So that's one of my favorite things so far. There's buckets of conferences and productions and stuff like that, of course, all over the place.
And is the majority of it happening on the birthday weekend of the 23rd and 24th of April, or spread out?
It's spread out. It's all over the place. Of course, I'll be surprised if the map doesn't just implode on the 23rd.
Yeah.
We're trying to really encourage a year of Shakespeare and a whole celebration. And you know, there are a lot of people who. Theater makers who say to me all the time, oh God, why are you doing that tired old playwright? There's all these new plays. And why would we do any of these plays again? And I think, well, the first thing I think is you have disappeared up your own theatrical ass a little bit. If you think that everybody is walking around the planet knowing the story of Hamlet the way you do, as somebody who's got an MFA in acting from, you know, Northwestern or Yale or wherever, And these men with whom I work at Sing Sing are a perfect example. They had never heard of Twelfth Night before, for the most part. And, you know, they originally, when we picked it, there was a little bit of a, well, I guess Kate says it's funny about the selection process, right? They didn't really honestly get the funny. They took it on faith. Right. And one thing that's been really beautiful over the past, I would say about 3 weeks ago, so about a month into the rehearsal process, all of a sudden, Shakespeare belonged to them. And it wasn't funny anymore, Austin, because I said it was. It was funny because it was funny.
Right. Yeah.
And now Shakespeare is theirs.
Yeah.
For the rest of their lives, there's a part of a conversation that they get to participate in, and they're going to engage with all the rest of these plays in a different way for forever. Because now they know that one of the first moments was the Conolingus joke, right? When Sir Toby says to Sir Andrew in Act 1, Scene 3, I hope to see a housewife take thee between her legs and spin it off. And a couple of the guys laughed, and then they immediately looked a little guilty and a little like, oh, we're not supposed to. And I looked up and I said, nope, that means exactly what you think it means. And everybody kind of, their eyes got kind of bright and they were like, Shakespeare's telling the rude stuff, right? And I mean, you and I have known for years and years, right? The bawdry is how high school kids get hooked, right?
Absolutely. Sometimes it's the only thing you can cling to in a bad production of Shakespeare.
In a bad, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the first thing for a lot of the guys was looking for those rude things. But then they were like, what else does he have to say? And we actually had this really deep conversation on Wednesday night about love and the different kinds of love that you see in the play and why that is going to be important for the population, because so many men who are incarcerated for a long time decide that their families are better off if they just stop communicating with them. And their families don't understand it. Their families are bewildered and hurt because they don't even say, I think you'd be better off if we just, I want you to go forth and live your life, right? They don't say that. They just shut down.
Right.
So just to have a conversation about the value of love.
Yes, there are lots of great contemporary plays and contemporary playwrights. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one shouldn't have a steady diet of one or the other. But it feels like, maybe it's just because it's 2016, maybe it's just because I've been working for the last year and a half on Long Lost Shakes. You know, it feels like there is a kind of resurgent, a reinterest, genuine reinterest that hopefully won't go away on April 25th, 2016, about Shakespeare. Am I nuts about that?
It's hard for me to perceive that because I live so much of my life in a kind of a Shakespearean corner anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I think that people tend to perceive my work as being somebody who is a director of Shakespeare and a director of plays by contemporary American women. And so it's hard for me to really see. One thing that I found kind of interesting, I saw my second production of Pericles in less than a month earlier this week. And I thought, well, now that all by itself, like that, why would Pericles have caught the zeitgeist, you know?
Yeah.
But it does seem like every once in a particular play that is one of the less performed plays, all of a sudden, you know, there's 19 productions of The Winter's Tale all over the place all at once. Or,
I have yet to see the production that convinces me of The Winter's Tale.
I'm sorry to hear that. I wish you'd seen the one that I did at American Shakespeare Center.
I wish I had too. I have seen two wildly different productions of Pericles, both of them very satisfactory.
Okay.
Both of them lovely. And I saw, of course, Aaron Posner and Teller's production of The Tempest in Chicago, which was...
That was amazing.
Pretty, in my head, definitive. That's the fun thing, is that a person who says, oh, we should be doing contemporary stuff, rather, why Shakespeare, why... Well, that person has had a bad experience with Shakespeare, in my head. I mean, I would be upset about Shakespeare too if the only way it were done was in the boring, well, it was done this way 100 years ago, so that's the way we're going to do it. I mean, any play, not just Shakespeare, any play needs to speak to us now.
Right.
You know, or why are we doing it?
Right.
You know, I feel for the people who program Shakespeare festivals and they go, oh, we got to do Henry V again. Anybody got any ideas?
Well, you know, but and yet at the same time, I think one of the challenges for festivals that go, oh God, we have to do Henry V again. Anybody got any ideas? Is that they start to be the people who say, God, why are we doing Henry V again? And they make this assumption that everyone knows the play as they do.
That's right.
And they forget that. I mean, certainly there are people, especially people who go to a destination festival like Oregon or Utah or American Shakespeare Center. Certainly there are people in the audience who know the play cold. And then there are those people who sit in the front row with the script and, you know, follow along and make little gasping sounds when they realize there's a cut missing and so on.
yeah.
But there are always people in the audience who are coming to the play for the first time. And I think one of the things that we need to remember as theater makers is that we got to take care of those people first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my husband is a civilian. He's not a theater person. We went to see Kevin Spacey's Richard III at Brooklyn Academy of Music, probably, I don't know, whatever that was, 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And at intermission, he turned to me and he said, do you mind if I wait for you in the lobby? And I said, why? And he said, because they're making me feel really stupid. And I thought for a minute about what had happened in the first act. And then I thought, well, no wonder. You know, the way it was staged for theater people and scholars who knew the play inside out.
Yeah.
And if you knew the play inside out, it was kind of interesting and compelling what they had chosen to do. But they were fighting the text in a bunch of places. in a way that left people who didn't know the plague cold completely in the dark, yep. literally as well as figuratively.
Yep. I saw a production of Hedda Gabler in Chicago, a much lauded production that I didn't care for in the slightest because it was a production for people who know the play. It was, and I don't know the, I mean, I know it a little, but I don't know it as that well. And I just went, oh, everybody's saying, oh, it's an interesting spin. Yeah, it's a spin. It's not the play.
Not the play.
It's a spin on the play. It's not the play. Mm-hmm. And so I just, that's where I roll my eyes and go, well, all right. You guys keep patting yourselves on the back and lose more audience members as you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a very good thing, point you're saying. We got to service the people. I mean, hopefully the shows that the Renewed Shakespeare Company do are entertaining and fun, whether you know the topic that we're satirizing or you don't know the topic that we're satirizing. But I think when we take on Shakespeare, I think if we accomplish anything worthwhile, it's the idea that people can come out of there going, wow, that was really great. If those idiots can play with Shakespeare that way, how tough could he be?
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. If you're celebrating Shakespeare this year, go to weareshakespeare.nd.edu and tell everyone where and what you're doing. Then send us your 12th night insights via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, woman disguised as her twin brother Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Emma Hollis. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Christopher Moore, the author of Fool, Sacre Bleu, A Dirty Job, The Serpent of Venice, and Lamb, the Gospel According to Biff, Christ's Childhood Pal. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 498/1494 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And now I leave you with this slightly random but not totally unrelated non sequitur regarding the English actor, director, critic, and theorist Harley Granville Barker.
That's Harley Granville Barker. I don't know if you can tell, but he's overlooking the proceedings. He was very good friends with George Bernard Shaw. He was a director, and he wrote all these prefaces to Shakespeare, which right. are pretty much genius. And then he did this. He had this radical idea in 1912 that maybe Shakespeare shouldn't be done on a proscenium arch, and maybe you didn't need 9 sets to do Shakespeare. Maybe you could have a unit set and bring on a bench if you needed one.
This radical 300-year-old idea.
Radical 300-year-old idea. And HGB sort of brought it back.
Oh, very cool. Well, thanks, HGB.
Yeah, and he was redhead.
A ginger!
True story.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.